College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Okay, overall, the matchups haven't been great, but three straight weeks of 20-plus point dogs, they have beaten a top 10 team, and it actually shapes up a lot of stuff for us as we round out October, get into November, and all those key matchups. Cannot wait to talk to Kirk Herbstreit about his experiences with game day moving forward. Also, I got a really big question about where game day is decided each and every weekend. Questions for Herbie for our listeners coming your way. Also want to remind you, we've got a new way. If you want to ask Herbstreit a question, go to Twitter, hashtag CFBpod, and that's where you can ask Herbstreit a question. What we'll do is we'll round out the best questions. Taylor Schwenk, our great producer on the other side, we'll round those questions up, and every Monday at the end of the podcast, we'll get to those questions for Herbstreit. Your questions, he'll give you the answers to the best ones. Once again, hashtag CFBpod. And great to have Kirk Herbstreit with us here every Monday. What was South Dakota like, that experience, Herbie?
Very cool. Very cool. You know, we talked last week about when we get a chance to go into the FCS and how, you know, you go in to the weekend wondering what it might be like, and then you come out of it like, man, that was awesome. You know, and of course, Pat McAfee joined us as our celebrity picker, who stepped in for Adam Vinatieri, who's an alum, and just hit it out of the park. We had a lot of fun with him and the scene there. You know, every week we get done with a game day and we kind of are on the set there, just kind of shaking each other's hands, like, you know, how much fun we had. And it's like, man, that might have been the best crowd we've had in a long time. Then yeah. The next week we go somewhere. It's like, man, that might have been the best crowd we've ever had. So we've had a lot of fun this year. It's a great mix. And, you know, that's the cool thing about, as you know, and you cover all the sports, but I know you specialize in college football with your studio show, this sport really never gets old because the storylines constantly change and new players come in and the energy and the emotion and the passion every single week. It just, for me, it just doesn't get old. I love it every week.
I'm with you. Nothing could touch it. But my biggest question watching the entire environment, the experience there, is how many push-ups did McAfee do before you guys came out with him segment? Because clearly when you're trying to show the gun show out there in that environment, McAfee's got to be doing, what, 10, 20 push-ups?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's as he says, for the brand. Yep. Part of his brand is just, and I think Corso even said, nice outfit, you know, and it's like, hey, coach, that's how he rolls, man. That's his look. You know, no matter what shirt he has on or sweatshirt, he's gonna take the sleeves off. Dude is just full of energy. I've been talking to him for a while about, man, one day we're gonna have you on as a celebrity picker, and he's just one of those guys that's just naturally entertaining and funny. You know, yeah. he just it's the way he's wired, and hopefully we'll see more of him. You know, he's over at ESPN. He does the Thursday night games, and I think he could be a superstar in studio.
Yeah, you know, and we're seeing a little bit of it. You get a little taste of it, the energy every time he's on, no matter what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it a little bit there quickly about the energy and the environment every time you guys go somewhere, especially somewhere new. Yep. And let's talk a little bit about this. I want to get your background because I don't even know. I've been around where I've heard inklings about, hey, I remember several years ago, you know, things had to line up a few weeks prior for Temple to host Notre Dame and for game day to be there. Yeah. And they were like, hey, you guys just keep on winning the way the schedule looks. But when it comes to a game day decision, like PJ Fleck, I mean, he made a case that undefeated Minnesota should be the host on November 9th when undefeated Penn State comes to town. Minnesota's never hosted a game day. His explanation is about game day being unique and selling stories, and every week game day could go to LSU and Alabama. And then you guys had that great video with you, Fowler, and the Bear. It was brief, but about going to Memphis next weekend as they host SMU. So what goes into like this decision on where you guys go? How much is the crew involved in that decision as well?
Man, that is a great question. A couple things. Number one, being on the show for 24 years, I thankfully get to at least participate and listen in on what they're thinking about, and a lot of times they'll ask me just for my take, or probably they'll ask Reese for his take. And at the end of the day, executives make the decision, but it is cool that they encourage us to offer our input. And, you know, we might think, hey, the show needs to go here. And at the end of the day, they decide the show goes there, you know, so that's their call. But, like right now we're taping this and doing this on a Monday morning. Mm-hmm. And it's very unusual, unless something's happened in the last 30 minutes that I'm not aware of. They're still, you know, a lot of people have been reaching out to me through Twitter saying, is game day coming to the cocktail party down in Jacksonville? You know, it's number 6 against number 8. And I haven't heard anything as we sit here. Typically Sunday morning or even Saturday night, you know, I'll get a text, you know, during the game I'm calling, hey, you guys can announce game day's going wherever. And so we'll just mention it during the game. And usually Sunday morning at the latest, mm-hmm. you'll get an email or a text that says, hey, well, this is where game day is going. I've got nothing right now. You know, I think we're going to Memphis because SMU is such an incredible story and Memphis is having a magical year as well in the American. And I think we're going there, but I don't know. And so, you know, this is kind of an interesting question, the timing of this question, because it's the first time since I've been on the show for 24 years that we're on a Monday. And I still have no idea where I'm going, calling the game Saturday night on ABC, but, you know, within Memphis, but I don't know where game day is going. And for people who say, why can't it go to number 6 against number 8? That's a no brainer. Normally, if that game were on campus, it would be a no brainer. Mm-hmm. You know, if it were in Athens or in Gainesville, obviously that's the spot. We have not had a lot of luck going to these neutral site NFL stadium parking lot shows. It just takes away from just what we think game day should be. We went there last year and it was kind of a, you know, it was okay. It wasn't like, whoa, that was awesome. Yeah. Can't wait to get back to this. Now the game is and the atmosphere, you know, around the weekend is great, but you know, if you get into an NFL parking lot at a stadium, it's just blah. Yep. You know, so that's what hurts that game. Those neutral site games, the OU Texas game is unique just because of the setting at the state fair. But yeah, that's kind of how it happens. I'll offer some feedback to some of the guys that make the decisions and a lot of times they'll agree and sometimes they won't and they make the decision. But game day doesn't just go. We try to go to the game of the week when it's an obvious situation, but they're also, you know, they take into consideration, like if we end up going to Memphis and you've got undefeated SMU who's ranked this year and having a year that they haven't had since Eric Dickerson was there. Mm-hmm. And you've got Memphis who's got a great coach and a great program and a great story in their own right and a fun city. You imagine if game day shows up in Memphis, what that scene would be.
It'd
like.
It'd be awesome.
It'd be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
And at the end of the day, Kevin, we're a pregame show and people tune into our show and you see thousands of people screaming and tailgating. We're kind of symbolic of what's happening all over the country at their own tailgate, you know, at their own setting, wherever they happen to be. Hopefully when they tune into game day, they kind of feel that vibe wherever we are. And I think if we end up going to Memphis, I think we'll have a historic show. I think it'll be incredible. Just like UCF last year was one that we all remember because of the setting and how many people ended up showing up at the show.
Yeah, and a couple things play into this too. You brought up now if you're at an NFL stadium, and I just think about Fort Worth and what you guys have to deal with Jerry's World, where you guys are in that town, and then that's still ways away from the stadium. So you're losing the ambiance, you're losing the setting, right?
Yeah,
and There are a lot of logistic things that have to happen for you guys to go somewhere. You guys have to make sure that if you're doing it in a city, if you're doing it in an environment, that everything is cleared and everything when it comes to safety.
Yeah, like when we went to Philly.
Yes.
We went to Philly. And by the way, that ended up being an incredible setting, but we weren't anywhere close, I don't believe, to the university.
You weren't.
You know, or close to, you know, obviously where they played the game, but the powers to be and our director, Rodney, who comes up with, you know, makes a lot of the effort and the traveling and trying to predict where it might be and where it might work. And like you said, in Philly with Notre Dame and Temple, and Temple's having a big year with Matt Rhule, we showed up and they finally figured out, you probably know the name of the spot where we were.
You were on Market, right in front of Independence Hall, in between the Liberty Bell and the Constitution Center.
Right.
And
that
land is owned by the government.
Right. So the city was involved. The mayor was involved. I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. And I think the reason that we're waiting, I guess, from what I understand, till Monday is because the exact same thing is going on with Memphis. I think they're waiting to sit down with the mayor and to sit down with the city officials to talk about, you know, where we might eventually end up. So that's what's being held up. But I loved what PJ Fleck brought up, and I loved his passion. I'm a big fan of his. He's one of those guys, I think if you sit in a room with him, you can't help but just like sit up straight. And, you know, even if you're not a player, you just happen to be in a conversation with him about anything.
You're locked in.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, anytime he's on TV, I'm engaged and dialed into anything he says. So when he said, all right, here comes my message. You guys ready? Here we go. And he kind of went on and he made a very, very strong case. And by the time he was done, I said, I'm in. You know, I would love to come to Minneapolis for Penn State. Undefeated Penn State and undefeated Minnesota would be a great setting. I cannot imagine what that would be like around the game day set with those two teams and the years that they're enjoying. And unfortunately, you have LSU and Alabama. And he said, well, you can do LSU and Alabama any year. This year, it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Let's assume Tua's back and healthy. You got Joe Burrow, LSU, both are undefeated. I mean, we always call it, seems like, the game of the century. This one has a chance to be historic just because of the way the build-up and the setup of the game, the potential of a high-scoring game in LSU-Alabama. It's the last time you could say that. So I just wish that game were on any other weekend besides November 9th.
And we'll be back with much more from Herbie and his thoughts on Week 9. But first, a word from AT&T.
Yeah, college football is great unless, of course, it's just okay. Like when students decide to paint their chest with different letters to spell some word, and then they stand together to get on TV, but they're spelling the word wrong, or they lined up in the wrong order. Sure, not everybody's an English major, and I get it. We can't all win the national spelling bee. But come on, people. You should know how to spell Wildcats or Bulldogs. The purpose isn't to have a word jumble in the student section to keep your mind sharp or something. Just okay is not okay, whether it's college football fans or your wireless network. You want to watch the best college football just like you want to go with AT&T, America's best network. Don't settle for typos on people's chests, and don't settle for anything less than the best wireless network. Get the best college football and get AT&T. Best network based on GWS One Score, September 2019.
Another backstory, too, is on how you guys decided. You also decided on results. Like, if Tulsa makes that kick, that poor kid, that he makes that kick, you're not talking about the idea of going to Memphis for Memphis SMU, right? Because of the matchup. Memphis survives winning 42-41.
Right.
But again, if the kid makes that kick from 29 yards out, Memphis then gets their second loss, and you lose that luster there.
Yeah.
And that's not a knock to what SMU's
doing. How about
that? Right?
How about that? I'm in the middle of calling Notre Dame, Michigan, and I've got TVs on up in the booth while I'm calling games. So I'm pretty dialed in on what's going on. You know, we're getting updates, obviously, from you and others. And I'm sitting here thinking, what? And then Bear says into my ear, Tulsa's lining up for a game-winning field goal. And in my ear, and I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Yep.
I hit it back. Game's going on. Notre Dame, second down and five. You know, and I'm like, Bear, how far out's the kick? How far out's the kick? He's like, he comes back, chip shot, you know, throw by Ian Book, incomplete. And then Bear comes back, and he's like, he missed it.
He missed it.
Yes. I go, oh, my gosh. Yeah. That was like the middle of the third quarter of Notre Dame, Michigan.
I feel terrible, too, for Tulsa because, again, they had SMU on the ropes.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that. SMU had a big comeback in that contest, and then they had the chance to beat Memphis there. What a tough experience.
Tough couple losses for sure. But that's the ebb and flow of where the show could go. You know, watching a kicker miss a chip shot and ends up, we'll probably end up going to Memphis.
And you have the ability to do that too. And obviously you're locked into the game you're calling, but that night you had the ability to do that because the no-show that we saw from Notre Dame. I'm still stunned by it. I understand the weather. I understand the conditions, but Michigan looks completely different in their last six quarters of play. But to me, it's the no-show from those guys. And Brian Kelly takes a little bit, he should take some of the responsibility, but I'm just stunned how they looked at Georgia and how we were trending into this game. And for them defensively, where Michigan's offensive line, which has been a weakness most of the year, they dominated the game, and then they fell into the trap of Don Brown, because Don Brown is one of those guys that if you don't have dynamic players, he will feast against your offense. And I was stunned that Notre Dame couldn't do anything.
Wasn't that shocking?
Yeah.
I mean, that was, and we'll get to Kansas State and the big upset over Oklahoma, which was probably the biggest, upset of the weekend. But I was just as surprised. You know, if you lose the game in Ann Arbor, a night game at the Big House, you know, it's tough to win there. But to lose in the fashion in which they lost was a big, big surprise. Now, I called the Miami Notre Dame game a few years ago, and it was very similar.
Yep.
It got out of control in a hurry. Notre Dame was overwhelmed, never in the game, really embarrassed themselves that night. And Brian Kelly would tell you that they've used that loss on a big stage as motivation of how to avoid that in the future. And so he put a lot of tactics together in the off seasons the last couple of years of, you know, things going on in the weight room, you know, unpredictable things, loud noises, just to make them have to really get used to distractions. And he thought it paid off for them a year ago when they went on the road and played. And I think he felt pretty confident with this group of kind of some veterans, especially quarterback with Ian Book, that they were going to be okay. And they went to Athens, as you said, very tough environment. Yeah, they lost a game, but they put their best foot forward. I think a lot of us, including myself, thought, you know, I know Georgia won the game, but man, mm-hmm. I'm pretty impressed with Notre Dame, the way they competed. And now we keep watching Notre Dame. I'm shocked to see how lethargic they were, unprepared they were, and unwilling to compete in that game. And no fight. This, because they have Duke and Virginia Tech and Pitt and Navy and I think Stanford at the end of the year, that's what they have remaining. They could win every game by 70. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter.
Yep.
Nothing that they have left will get the taste out of people's mouth of what they just did in Michigan. And so, you know, you're frustrated and shocked by Notre Dame. And at the same time, as you said, the last six quarters, the second half of Penn State, where they outgained Penn State 230-80 and came up short where they dropped the ball at the end, that game's headed to overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And then they use that momentum. They come at home, they come back to home and have a, just in the rain, they have to deal with those conditions. Notre Dame won the only team dealing with the conditions. Michigan deals with that adversity. And man, they sent a message that this is, it's a different Michigan team. As you said, they got Michigan State, they have Ohio State. They're going to be a thorn in the side for whoever is left on their schedule. They're playing with a lot of confidence. And Don Brown plays that defense. And if you don't make him pay for it on the perimeter by throwing the ball down the field and getting separation, he's just going to attack the line of scrimmage, which he did against Notre Dame. They had 47 yards rushing. And, you know, I think that Michigan becomes a team, even though they have a couple losses, and they might not be able to still get to the Big Ten championship game. They can still try to wreck some people's dreams in the process.
And
of
then
trying to get there.
They could be going, you know, into the Big House with just two losses, with Ohio State coming to visit at the end, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That is an intriguing storyline.
And if Ohio State wins out, mm-hmm. you'll hear people that week saying, "Well, it doesn't even matter if Ohio State loses; they still go because they will have had to play Penn State the week before.
Yeah.
If they beat Penn State, it won't matter if they lose to Michigan or not. They would still go to the Big Ten championship." But obviously that game is a season within itself.
Yep.
And Ohio State's had a lot of success with Urban Meyer. Now Ryan Day gets his chance. But we've seen in that rivalry, the team that has everything to lose and the team that has nothing to lose can really impact that game and the outcome of that game. So we'll have to, you know, a few weeks away from that, but it's a very different feel when you think of Ohio State, Michigan right now than it felt maybe two or three weeks ago.
It's now time for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment with Herbie. Let's see where he thinks mayhem could strike this upcoming weekend. And remember, get better protection for mayhem with All-State. Kirk?
Well, if you look around this weekend at some of the games, I would say it's a little bit of all the weeks. I don't know how you feel about this weekend, but it's one of those weeks that isn't quite as many games or marquee matchups mm-hmm. as we've had in the past. Oregon and USC maybe stand out, but I think the best chance for mayhem is probably going to be SMU and Memphis, believe it or not. And I think it's because you have an undefeated SMU team on the road taking on Memphis, a team that can score. I just think that possibly will be the best spot for that mayhem. So I'll be pointing out where I think mayhem could change the game. And remember, Mr. Mayhem, he could show up on your turf. So get better protected with Allstate.
And before we go any further, let's pause for a moment to hear from Allstate. Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today.
Now back to the show.
All right, Herbie, let's take a look now. When we break things down, obviously things have changed with Oklahoma losing. How does your top four, and let's go to top six, look right now?
If I start with the first two out, I would have Penn State undefeated. What a year they're having. Mm-hmm. Knocking on the door at five. And I would have the Florida Gators. There's a lot of one-loss teams that are out there right now. I think, we'll find out with Florida and Georgia this weekend. But I think Florida, with the way Kyle Trask has played, I would give them just a little bit of an edge right now over Oregon, who got tested last weekend in a late game against Washington State. So I would have Penn State and Florida at 5 and 6. 4, I would have Clemson, who, as we knew, matter of time till they put it all together mm-hmm. and just getting, for Clemson fans, who cares if you're 4 or 1? You win all your games.
And you're in.
Get into the playoff. And then here we go. Let's see. You can shut everybody's mouth up by just the team goes out and plays, which they've done in the past, by the way, where people doubted them coming out of the ACC. Who have they played? And then they get in the playoff and they remind everybody, oh yeah, they're really good. So if they assume they're going to keep winning, they're going to be in the playoff. 3, I have Alabama. I thought they did a really good job without Tua last week. I think that defense, that young defense is getting better and better. And it's, they get a bye week to get healthy, get Tua right. And then, of course, following weekend, they play LSU, who I have at 2. Joe Burrow, you could easily put LSU at 1 because of the resume, which a lot of people have LSU at 1. I just have Ohio State ahead of them, mainly because from week 1 to week 9, through the entire season, they have been very, very consistent with their offense. Justin Fields and J.K. Dobbins, that offensive line, the receivers, the defense. Chase Young's getting the headlines, and he should, but the linebacker play, the secondary, the entire defensive line, giving up 7 points a game. They lead the nation. If you look at offensive efficiency, defensive efficiency, they are clearly the most consistent team. And you can say, well, they haven't played anybody. Well, there are a lot of teams that don't play great teams, but they don't look this dominant every single week. Mm-hmm. And that's why I have Ohio State up above LSU just slightly, despite LSU's fantastic resume.
All right, speaking of dominant, Justin Fields, pedestrian Dave when you look at the numbers in the past. Three total touchdowns in that game against Wisconsin. And J.K. Dobbins was really, really good. But we can't ignore the guy on the other side. And I want to ask you a serious question here. If Chase Young, caught one touchdown pass in a trick play or was used as a guy in the backfield like Fridge just for a couple of downs, how much of a landslide would he win the Heisman? Because we only talk about offensive players, but that man, you can make a case he's the best player in the country now.
I don't think you can make a case. I just think it's the truth.
Yeah.
I just think that's the way it is. And I don't think it took a 4-sack, 5 tackles for a loss performance against Wisconsin for him to prove that. It helped. I actually did a feature on him on game day leading into the game that was about why this guy is who he is. And the timing of the piece couldn't have been any better leading into that Wisconsin game. And we sat down in the film room with Chase Young and his coach, Larry Johnson, who's was at Penn State for a number of years, had a lot of first rounders there. And now he's been at Ohio State. He's had obviously the Bosa brothers and a lot of other great players that have come through Ohio State's defensive line. And his latest project is Chase Young. And it was fascinating for me to sit in and listen to Larry Johnson talk about the smallest details of where Chase Young, who looks very similar right now to when he came in as a freshman, but how much he has grown and changed from his hand placement to his counter move to the way he can get his hips turned at the top of the pocket, what he's able to bend his body and get into the quarterback. All these different things that great defensive linemen, and if you see the Joey and Nick Bosa in the NFL, they had a monster weekend, and they come back in the offseason to get back to Larry Johnson to work on technique. So you put a human body that looks like Chase Young, who's very athletic, with Larry Johnson teaching him, and you get what you get. And it's the results that we see. Right now in the Heisman, you have 3 votes. It's supposed to go to the most outstanding player, not the most valuable player on an offensive team that's ranked in the top 5, which is the way it seems to go. But Ndamukong Suh was the last guy, I think, in 09 that created this kind of buzz for a defensive player, a defensive only player. But right now it's Joe Burrow because of the injury to Tua. It's Joe Burrow and Chase Young. I mean, those are the two guys through the first 2 months of the season. Now Tua's a 5-touchdown performance against LSU and a win away from probably becoming the front runner, because that's how these races go. Yep. But, right now coming off of a 4-sack weekend and a top 10 kind of game, Chase Young made a pretty big statement, and I have no problem putting him right there right now, 1 or 1B, with Joe Burrow, because Joe's been a huge story this year in his own right with what he and the LSU offense have been able to do.
Mel Kiper's big board, he has him number 2 overall in his last one, but the reason why is because obviously the love that we have, generally when it comes to the quarterback play, and it depends on who gets that number 1 or number 2 pick, but the kid's been outstanding. And Dan Orlovsky, our colleague, he said something interesting this morning on Get Up. I want to get your thoughts. He mentioned the success from Nick Bosa and how it could become the model for like elite college players. Remember, he got hurt early, decided, early in the season last year in that TCU game, decides to sit out the rest of the season, rest up, get ready for the draft. He says colleges have to be concerned about this. If you're an elite college football player and you're looking at the lay of the land, you say, well, do I need to protect my interest? Because it did not hurt Nick Bosa. He thinks it may have helped Nick Bosa to sit out the majority of last season and wait for the NFL. What are your thoughts about that?
I think it depends on the individual and kind of how you're wired. I think in Nick Bosa's case, he had a legitimate injury. I don't think he had a plan of, I'm going to sit out this year. Nick Bosa is a player that loved his teammates at Ohio State. His teammates loved him, and he got a tricky injury that required a procedure, and he needed to step away. The very earliest, the best case scenario would have been mid-December to even start practicing. So he decided to step away and start preparing for his workout for the NFL. If he didn't have an injury like that, it wouldn't have even come up in conversation with him and his dad and his family. And I think most of the wiring of these players, while the media and I think the outside world, and I know Dan was a player, while they want to really focus on the NFL and where this guy's stock is and where Mel might have him and where the NFL GMs might have him. He's already a top five guy. He needs to stay out. Now, a Leonard Fournette, the way he's wired and the way he looked at maybe his career, he seemed to be a guy that was willing to kind of step away and, hey, I've worked my whole life to get in this position. I don't want to risk the injury. I'm just going to come up with a quote unquote ankle injury type of thing and just kind of stay out. And clearly worked out for him. But there are a lot of guys that can't help. They want to play and they want to compete and they want to play in these big games and they want to have that opportunity. So I think you can't really throw a blanket statement out there and say the NFL or the college coaches need to worry because this worked out for Nick Bosa.
Yeah.
And you can't really throw out a blanket statement and say, you know, all players should play in all these games because I just think it depends on how that player is wired. If you told Chase Young today, hey man, you're already a top five pick.
Mm-hmm.
You don't worry about playing. You might get hurt. You don't play against Michigan. Don't play in the bowl game. Don't play. He'd look at you like you had five heads. Like, what are you talking about, man? I'm a warrior. Like,
yeah.
I live for J.K. Dobbins. Like, I live for the rest of my defensive line. How are you trying to take me out of this? Like, you're gonna have to pull me out of this. I'm not going anywhere. I would say that's 99% of the player's mindset, regardless of where they might stack up in the quote unquote mock drafts or the way the NFL might look at them. You know, like Trevor Lawrence, everyone's like, man, Trevor, he could sit out now and never play again. You'll be fine. It's like, it just doesn't even cross these guys' minds until somebody asks them about it. So it's hard to imagine yourself when you're 18, 19, 20, 21 being taken away from your teammates. Unless you're forced to by injury.
It's fascinating too, because you brought up Fournette, and I think that's a position thing too, at running back, how many hits you're going to take. And then at quarterback, I'm like, well, you need as many reps and as much experience as possible before going to the next level. Because, and again, it's a case by case example, but I look at Mitchell Trubisky and a guy that at North Carolina, where he had lightning in a bottle in 1 year and he played 12 games, right? And then he goes to the NFL, but you look at, does he have enough game experience? Or Dwayne Haskins, does he have enough game experience from one level to get to the next level?
Well, I'll just say this. I mean, Baker Mayfield had more reps than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's struggling, I don't think we can blame it on the game experience. I think it's where you're lucky enough to end up. You know, like if you end up with Sean Payton and the Saints,
yep.
I don't know if it matters really how many game reps you had in college. I think it has more to do with what system you fall into and who is calling the plays. And the NFL, I'm convinced more and more, why are the Saints good every year? Why are the Patriots good every year? Why are the Packers good every year? And I'm not saying that obviously Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady and Drew Brees have a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
But I also think that sometimes the ownership and the head coach and the structure that some of these franchises have or don't have. Like, I almost wonder, I don't know if the Browns ever will win.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I just don't know if it's just not the Bengals. They never win.
Yep.
You know, and I think when it comes down to evaluating quarterbacks, you might as well evaluate where they're going and who they're going to play for as much as what they're leaving behind and who they were in college. To me, it has as much to do with who they're going to play for and who's going to put them in a position to have success.
In just a minute, we're going to hear from Herbie and what he thought was the most surprising thing. And he has multiple things he wants to cover. But first, let's hear from our sponsor, Carhartt. You know who works hard? Rookies! Sure, they make mistakes, but no one's got more to prove. Knowing each day's another opportunity to outwork them all and earn the respect they deserve. Point is, no one outworks a rookie. That's why after 130 years, Carhartt is still approaching each day with the passion and work ethic of a company that's 130 years young. Same hunger, same determination, same giant chip on the shoulder. And in the same way a rookie needs to work hard to earn the respect of their peers, everything Carhartt makes has to keep earning the respect of the hardworking people who wear it. That's why Carhartt still works like a rookie. and why Carhartt will keep outworking them all for the next 130 years, too. Visit Carhartt.com/CFB to learn more and shop this season's hardest working gear. Now back to the show. Now let's wrap things up before we get to our listeners' questions. And I know we talk about some of the biggest win, and I think you can make a case that we discussed that when it comes to what Michigan did and the biggest disappointment in Notre Dame's performance. But I'm going to combine this one thing and the best thing you saw on Saturday to the most surprising thing. The best thing I saw on Saturday was what that experience at Kansas State and seeing, you know, the Little Apple lose its mind. And you can combine that to the most surprising thing. And what did you see with Oklahoma and from their defense, especially with all the hype? And we felt like they made that leap and they were going to be a different Oklahoma defense. And it felt like it was 2018 all over again and how they played against Kansas State in that offense.
I'm going to give you some quick one liners on, because I saw a lot of things that I liked, like USC coming back down 14 in the fourth quarter on the road, and the freshman delivering to Pittman for a couple touchdowns to come back at Colorado was really impressive. Alabama's backup quarterback Mac Jones coming in, and Alabama not missing a beat offensively was impressive. LSU, we've just been watching and bragging about this offense every week. And all of a sudden, Kevin Steele and that defensive line of Auburn said, not today. You're going to have to earn it today. And LSU finding a way against a really good team and a good defense, finding a different way, kind of throwing it underneath, running the ball, doing it not as flashy as they have, but they still found a way to earn a victory against Auburn. We talked about Chase Young at Ohio State, how impressive. But people can say, oh, Wisconsin's not that good. They lost to Illinois. Hogwash. Wisconsin, you'll see at the end of the year, they're a good team. They don't have a great quarterback. They have an inexperienced quarterback, but they're a good football team. For Ohio State to beat them 38-7 and Chase Young have that kind of day, that was impressive. Clemson finally put it together offensively, and I think they showed America what they're capable of doing. Penn State, the last one, on the road at Michigan State, a team that's beaten them 4 of the last 5. I thought they might have a little bit of an emotional hangover. They go to East Lansing and remind everybody how good they truly are with an impressive win. This kid, Sean Clifford, is a tremendous leader, and they got a big win against Michigan State. Utah.
Yep.
I know Cal's not great offensively. What Utah's doing that nobody seems to probably know much about east of the Rockies, please invest in watching Utah play defense. You could throw them into a very, very small circle of teams that right now are playing the best defense in the country. And then that gets us to Kansas State. You and I talked last week. I talked about it on game day. That game felt tricky to me for Oklahoma. Early kick, Manhattan, Kansas, playing a team that is better than I think a lot of people realize. They've been possessing the ball, playing good pass defense. I thought Oklahoma would pull out a victory late, but I didn't think it would be a shootout. I thought Oklahoma might be limping to the finish line and win one of those games that just they didn't quite have it. And Kansas State kept Jalen on the sidelines. Man, I had no idea that we were going to see Kansas State go up and down the field, moving the ball the way they did against this quote-unquote much-improved Oklahoma defense. They scored 17 in the third quarter alone, and that's when I think all of us probably nationally started to look around like, is this happening right now?
Yeah.
This is happening right now. You know what I mean? And they end up holding on. A great effort by Oklahoma to close there. And they come up a little bit short without getting that onside kick. But my reaction to that is, this is college football. Third straight week, we've seen a big, huge underdog win outright. And it's, my second reaction is, I don't want to say Oklahoma's just fine because that defense is a concern still.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the college football playoff, you know, it hurts them a little because now instead of winning outright, you know, winning all their games, you know, they're obviously in. Now, if they were able to win the Big 12 and sit there at 12-1, now they potentially are in a debate or a discussion with the Pac-12 champ. If there's a one-loss Oregon or a one-loss Utah, they could be in a debate with, let's say, LSU loses to Alabama in a shootout and LSU sitting there. They don't go to Atlanta and they're 11-1. They've looked great all year. All of a sudden, you're in a debate with teams potentially like that. So it opened the door a little bit, but I still feel that Oklahoma could be okay.
Yeah, it's an interesting conversation too, because when the loss was taking place, I was like, well, this helps Notre Dame, and then Notre Dame did what they did, right? And then you go back to the Pac-12 question, right? And Oregon surviving on that kick, it could have been a near collapse the way that game was being played out late in that contest.
Oh,
Oregon
boy.
Surviving, and that sets up the Oregon-Utah conversation down the road. And don't sleep on USC and how they could screw things up, but the Oregon-Utah conversation in the Pac-12 championship, that could play a huge role.
Absolutely.
And let's give some credit to Chris Klieman. What a hire for Kansas State, a home run, and Skylar Thompson looking like Michael Bishop. Because I had shades of Michael Bishop with the flashback of the running quarterback there in that environment. Great win for them. And I like it. I like that drama. I think we're going to have even more drama this weekend with Florida, Georgia. And let's not forget one little thing. Undefeated Baylor in Morgantown, Halloween night against West Virginia. I understand West Virginia is not the West Virginia we're used to seeing, but still, that environment on a Thursday night on ESPN, that could play a huge role here on how we look at the Big 12. Because if Baylor's rolling, that helps Oklahoma, especially in their showdown later on.
Yeah, and that's a game that, you know, people in the Big 12, especially Baylor and OU fans know, but I don't know if people know there's so much attention on November 9th with a lot of heavyweights going head to head. The very next week, it's if Baylor's able to beat West Virginia and then go over to TCU and win, that would set up a major showdown on the 16th in Waco with Oklahoma. Even with that one loss, they obviously can't afford to lose another one, taking on the Bears. If the Bears get there, they'll be at that point probably ranked in the top 10, I would think, if they get they're 12 right now. If they win two more, Matt Rhule could have an undefeated Baylor team in the top 10, taking on the Oklahoma Sooners at home, which would be, you know, a game I don't think many people predicted back in August when the season started.
Yeah, we've all been patient. I like a little bit of chaos. I didn't want to be in a position where we're going to be, you know, in November discussing like five undefeated teams.
Yeah.
Let's see some questions here where we could have a discussion of how the quality of team, the quality of schedule, and don't circle that game that Oregon played against Auburn on how that could play a role if Auburn gets back on track. Cause again, this is a two loss team. They could have four losses by the end of this. And that's another conversation, but anytime more Auburn can show up, that will help Oregon considering what happened at the beginning of the season that I think people forget, right?
Yep. And a side note on Auburn before the questions.
Yeah.
Imagine going through a season where you got a great defense and a lot of those defensive linemen led by Derek Brown came back kind of like Clemson the year before because they wanted to have a special year. You know, you're talking about guys wanting to leave and maybe sit out. These guys are the opposite. They all wanted to come back one more go around and see if they could make it. And they got a true freshman quarterback, right? And they play Oregon on a neutral site. They played at Texas A&M. They played at Florida. They played at LSU, and they're just warming up. Mm-hmm. I mean, think of, they've already played those four. They've got Georgia still coming up at home, and they have Alabama coming up at home. And all of that with a freshman, a true freshman in Bo Nix at quarterback. I mean, that is a monster's row of games that they've had to play. If you throw that Oregon game in and all those games away from home, all those games I just mentioned, not one of them until they get to Georgia and Alabama, all those games with a freshman away from home. And they've got two losses. So people might say, oh, the SEC bias. Why are they ranked so high? It's because of what they've gone through, to have two losses. I appreciate the AP. I'm not sure where the coaches have them. I'm actually looking right now. Coaches have them at 12, with two losses. So if there's an SEC bias, it's all the coaches around the country and all the AP writers around the country. What they're doing is recognizing the schedule that Auburn's had to play. So with two losses, they're ahead of undefeated Baylor. They're ahead of undefeated Minnesota, ahead of undefeated SMU. Like I said, it has everything to do with what the gauntlet of games that they've had to go through and most of them all away from Jordan Hare.
I'm with you. And the SEC bias is sometimes a lazy narrative.
Oh, yeah.
No one wants to really talk about nuance. They just want to say, hey, let's just paint this picture and just say this out loud, right?
Right.
Once again, I want to remind our listeners, if you got questions for Herbie, we're going a new route because I think it'll be better opening things up here for social media. Hashtag CFB pod. The best ones will be selected. This is an interesting one considering where you were, you know, this past weekend on game day and then where you had to be and then dealing with the weather. So you often have to travel from game day to whatever game you're actually calling that night. Give us an idea of what your travels were like this weekend from Brookings, South Dakota to Ann Arbor. What was that like?
And, you know, we were in Brookings. We got done with the show. We immediately went to a very small airport nearby the campus and had some weather issues when we landed, obviously. And Ann Arbor is one of those landings where you're coming down and you're like, man, we've been in a cloud for like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Desmond, who typically doesn't go with us from site to site because he goes back home after game day, he went with us this time because we were headed to Ann Arbor and he wanted to go and watch his alma mater. So I remember saying to Des, hey, Des, let me know when you see the ground because I'm looking out that window myself and I'm not seeing anything. And seriously, we were just forever. Luckily, it wasn't too much turbulence, but we were just going forever through the clouds. And finally, you could see the land. It rained from the time we got down, I'm sure for hours before that, but time we got down to about into the, we got down actually, I want to say about 2:30 Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately we go right over to the stadium when we land and we have our Allstate bus that's waiting right outside. Curtis is our man who drives every single week from stadium to stadium. And, he had it right outside of the stadium and we got on the bus and we're able to watch the rest of the Kansas State Oklahoma game. And we have five TVs in the back and just enjoy all that and, ribbing each other. And, you know, Bear makes a prediction, like he had Texas and TCU and I was kind of kidding him that Texas is going to win. And he went 3-0, by the way, on his board.
Mm.
Anytime his board games are up on the screens, man, we're just constantly yelling at him. And, you know, he'll do a fight song of whatever team he's picked. He'll whistle their fight song or he'll hum it, you know, so we're no different than Kevin, you and your crew.
Yep.
Or all the fans that are out there yelling and throwing things at the TV. You know, we do that. And then, typically I'll go down on the field before the game, but it was a monsoon leading into the game. So I just went right up to the stadium and, or right up to the press box and called that game and was incredibly disappointed by, as we talked earlier about Notre Dame and the lack of competitive spirit. But, that was it, pretty much a travel.
You know, it was great too that you and CF had the chance to, you know, appreciate what Maria Taylor was dealing with in the sidelines of that environment, right? I mean, Maria's, you know, she's always there, obviously with the NBA transition, had to miss game day, but she's hustling everywhere. And then her reward is to stay in the rain the rest of the night on the sidelines.
Yeah. I know. She's down there and she's, you know, we're like you guys, we're big teammates and you want to make sure that she's good, but yeah, she's down there doing the best she can to try to stay dry. Luckily, the second half, the rain subsided and it was just cold and windy at that point. But she's the best.
Our next question, it's our final one here on the podcast today. And I always wonder about this, especially when you guys go to commercial break, if you guys are scarfing down because they bring out some of the local food. And there was a burger next to you, multiple burgers next to you that looked pizzas.
Like a Frisbee.
Right? It looked like pizzas, right?
It was sick. I asked the guy when we went to break, 6 pounds.
What?
6 pounds. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, why would you make, I mean, they must just cut it up for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. 6 pounder. But yeah, you know what? We're usually that's near the latter part of the show and the guest picker's getting ready to come on. They always give Des all the good food. Des gets all the cupcakes and cake and ice cream and I'll get like a 6 pound burger or like this, you know, I don't know. I get all the, like, huge, massive looking things that I don't even know what half of them are.
You get the meals that give you a nice nap on the plane, right?
Yeah,
sitting right on that stomach.
Yeah, so I typically pass just because we're in the middle of the show and, you know, producers talking in your ear and things are going on. But, you know, if they'll ever bring me something smaller, I'll be more than happy to get involved. Yeah, but that's fun. You know, that's pretty cool that we, you know, they bring the local flair and local feel of, you know, what people are tailgating with, and people are kind enough to bring us food. But yeah, I somehow got to get the memo out that Dez getting all the good stuff.
Yeah, you brought up a great question here, especially this week too. You mentioned the sweets coming on Dez's side, and Pollock and I have gone in depth about his eating habits. The man does not touch anything with
sugar.
He
likes water.
Yeah.
And grass.
So what's your thing? Like, when it comes to Halloween candy, what's the number one candy in your mind for you?
I'm a Reese's peanut butter cup guy.
My man. All right.
Yeah, that's easy. I'm a peanut butter guy. Big time.
Okay.
Big time. So I don't know if there's maybe like one of those small Snickers. Here's what's funny with me. I don't like chocolate, like just chocolate, like a Milky Way.
Like a Hershey bar, right?
Yeah, I need the combination of peanut butter with the chocolate. You know, I can handle that. I enjoy that, obviously.
Yes.
Like if I go to Dairy Queen, I'm going Reese's Peanut Butter Cup Blizzard. You know,
ice cream, vanilla ice cream. Where are you going with that?
I go with vanilla ice cream.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got the best of both worlds. Three things, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're approaching.
What about you? What about you?
I'm a huge Kit Kat guy.
Yeah. I like Kit Kat.
And the Reese's Pieces, like, the peanut butter cups. And I've got a 7-year-old, 5-year-old, and 3-year-old.
Oh my
gosh. So I'm in trouble.
You're right in the middle of it.
I'm in so much trouble Thursday. And Pollock suggested like bribing the kids when they come home, you give them a toy and then that's where you take the candy away. So I think I'm going to blend a couple things. We'll get into the circle after we're done. We'll get in the middle of the living room. We'll dump everything out and I'll say, pick your 10 best things.
Yeah.
And then give me the rest, and then I'll give them. Right now, my boys are into football cards, so I'll pull out like a stack of football cards and say, "Let's open these, and then give me the candy."
Yeah, well, yeah.
So, and my little girl, I'll pull out some Disney doll that I just recently got her, and be like, "What
do
you need?
A win.
Here's a princess. Let's go." So we've got multiple princesses at the Disney store, so we can pull them out.
Say your ages again: 7, 7, 5, and 3. Oh my!
And I'm in the middle, and my 3-year-old girl is, you know, she's going to be a princess, Thursday night. But she was like, "Daddy, my request is you need to be Aladdin." And I'm like, "Oh man!" So you may see some.
I need some pictures. You need to send me pictures of this.
Yeah. I've convinced the boys that, you know, I'm going to change after the Aladdin thing with her and then maybe get dressed up as Bryce Harper, because they'll be excited about that. But I may have to go as Aladdin with her to walk around.
That is awesome. Yeah. So you're walking around and you're out in the street and she's old enough now to go. Is she old enough to go up to the door by herself, or are you going to walk her up?
No. I'm going to make sure her two brothers take her.
Okay.
Listen,
what a crew
show
you got.
Her the way to go, right?
Yeah. Who's more responsible, the 7 or the 5?
5-year-old. The 7-year-old could care less about his siblings. He's in that mode where he's like, "You guys are just in the way, and then I want your candy." The 5-year-old's fully aware of everybody around the house.
That is so. Those ages, man, just hold on to as tight as you can. Those are the best.
Appreciate that. Yeah. I needed that reminder yesterday.
Yeah.
Because yesterday we were on the brink where Dad's like, I gotta take a car ride. I'll be back to pick up food.
Oh man, I can relate to that. I got
we've all been there, and I'm still in the fog. So I'll come back to you in a few years when it comes to the teenage years, because you're handling that right now.
I know. 7, 5, and 3.
Yeah,
that's
man.
Where it is. That's all I'll tell you. 7, 5, and 3.
Herbie, have a good time wherever you go. I deep down, I hope you go to Memphis, but I understand if you got to go to the cocktail party. We enjoy it, and I'll see you on Tuesday on SportsCenter.
All right, man. Have a good one.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the CFB podcast with Herbie and Pollock wherever you get your podcast. We appreciate that. Again, our listeners, if you got questions for the guys, hashtag CFB pod on Twitter. Best questions will make the podcast for our guys. Ahead on Wednesday, Pollock is ready to talk trash about his Michigan pick over Notre Dame. Plus, it gets me ready for Halloween. I can't wait for that experience. I want to thank Herbie for joining us to get his thoughts on the weekend's biggest storylines. Also want to thank our sponsors, AT&T, Allstate, and Carhartt. And a big thanks to our producer, Taylor Schwenk, does a fantastic job wherever we are, sometimes on the road, sometimes in the studio. And don't forget, check out our brand new podcast, ESPN Daily, hosted by Mina Kimes. Monday through Friday, she takes a look at the most interesting stories at ESPN in just 20 minutes. Listen and subscribe now to ESPN Daily wherever you find your podcast. It's good stuff from Mina every single day. Again, if you want to be a part of the podcast, we love the questions. Hashtag CFB Pod. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.